Welcome to the midday, and just fresh in from the outside, so fresh that we could have gotten a weather report from her. We have Sarah Chang. Welcome. Welcome back.
Great to be back. Thank you.
I'm Norman Gilliland with Stephanie over there, and you're in town for another big performance.
I have three here this week. Yeah, they're making me work pretty hard here. We start tomorrow night, Saturday night and Sunday afternoon. Three concerts here.
The Brahms Violin Concerto.
Brahms, yeah, very, very happy about that. It's actually my next recording project as well, so I'm going to have a pretty big Brahms and Bruch here.
Yes, good, so. Good, solid stuff.
Yeah.
Not about that.
That's no small accomplishment.
Well, my last CD was the Vivaldi Four Seasons. So
right, you conducted and performed.
I did, which was really, for me, just personally, very, very exciting because I'd never actually played directed before. So it was a lot of fun, but but Brahms, Bruch, I mean, this is all, you know, bread and butter of what I grew up with, so this is going to be a great project.
How did you conduct the Vivaldi? With the violin bow or with a nod from the violin?
You know,
or
what? I've been pretty lucky. I've been working with some pretty amazing groups. And frankly, you know, they don't really need a conductor at all, really. So I just looked at it more as chamber music, you know, and, you know, just a few cues where it was necessary. But really, I mean, most of the musicians I work with, I mean, they don't need a conductor. They're incredible musicians by themselves. So.
And the Vivaldi was with the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra,
yes. Well,
right?
Well, the recording was. Yeah.
Oh,
recording
they perform without a conductor anyway.
Anyway, exactly.
Well, that's a good place to begin then.
Exactly. Yeah.
Who will you be doing the Brahms with?
The Brahms will be with Maestro Kurt Mazur, who used to be the music director with the New York Philharmonic, and will be doing it in Germany, in Dresden. So.
Yeah, he became a major political force in Germany, had a lot to do with the reunification.
Yeah, he really did, and he is basically their national hero there. So, and for me personally, he's like my musical godfather. You know, so
well, he's a charming guy, too. I got to meet him in Boston once.
Yeah. Yeah. He can be.
Well, yeah, I didn't have to work for him, you understand. It was strictly a passing social encounter.
No, but just on a musical, you know, stands when he's next to you on stage, he's incredible, absolutely incredible. And there's nobody else I would have wanted to record the Brahms with. So.
You just finished a very interesting project with a Greek composer. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I did, actually. This was my very first concerto premiere. Of a new contemporary work, Christopher Theophanides. He's a Greek-American composer. He's the hottest composer out there on the circuit right now. And he wrote this concerto for me, which we premiered in Pittsburgh about 3 weeks ago with the Pittsburgh Symphony. And it's a gorgeous piece. I was so excited to be a part of it because he wrote it, basically tailor-made it for me. So it was a project that we worked on together for about 2 years.
Now, there are stories about commissions, and I'm thinking of violinists in particular, who commission a work from a composer and then say, not really for me. Isn't that a kind of a risk when you commission something or you have something written just for you? Doesn't it kind of put you on the spot?
Well, you know what? I had a bit of a little insurance blanket here because I didn't commission it myself. The Pittsburgh Symphony commissioned it. So it was more their project than anything. But they brought me on board on this idea of the project about 2 or 3 years ago, and I jumped at it because first of all, I love Chris's work. I think he's a fabulous composer, and second of all, I actually haven't done that many new works. Mm-hmm. New works meaning, you know, compositions by living composers. So I've only done about 2 or 3 in the past, and they were sonatas or shorter pieces. So to be doing a full out, you know, huge concerto like this, and to be a part of a project from the beginning, from its infancy to see it through its fruition, it was really very, very exciting for me. And it's a gorgeous piece, very dramatic, one of the most beautiful second moments I've ever heard anywhere, and, you know, a crazy, insane, very, very technical third moment. And he wasn't very nice to me when he wrote that, but it's a very, very cool piece, and I definitely hope to be playing it more next year.
Did we mention specifically that you'll be playing with the Madison Symphony this weekend?
We should mention that.
Oh, by the way, department.
The Madison Symphony Orchestra with guest conductor Anutali.
And this is one of the... it's not the first time, but it's definitely one of the handful of firsts when I'm playing with a woman conductor, and she's fabulous. Really fabulous. She's from Estonia, and we just had our first rehearsal. yesterday, and she's young and she's really pretty and really nice, and it's actually a very interesting dynamic when you're on stage with another female.
Why? What's the difference?
Well, first of all, just it's very unusual, especially in this business, because there aren't a lot of female conductors,
right.
And for whatever reason that is, which I don't get, which I just do not get.
I've never heard an explanation for that.
I know. I haven't really heard a logical explanation either. But in any case, she's fabulous, incredibly talented, and very, very happy to be doing this with her.
Well, we'll look forward to the visuals.
Yeah.
There's also a piece by an Estonian composer, Tormis, on the program as well.
Exactly. It's a big program. They've got Shostakovich in the second half.
Yeah, the ninth.
And they're starting out with Barber, and it's a really meaty program, but it's good. It'll be a full, very, very satisfying evening.
Oh, it's good listening. I mean, the Barber is the school for scandal, which is just all but infectious. It's, engaging. And then the Shostakovich ninth is everybody was expecting a big war symphony, and he wrote this almost... sort of silly, a little
cheery little thing.
Yeah, it's a wonderfully nice, pleasant little shortish symphony from Shostakovich.
How about something from Sarah Chang?
This goes back a ways. And last time you were here, we have it in here somewhere, that groundbreaking CD that you recorded at the age of 9. Maybe we'll get to that a little bit later. But this only takes us back about 11 years and features you with the pianist, Charles Abramovitz.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are with a popular encore piece, The Melody by Gluck.
Mm-hmm.
Music of Gluck, as performed by Sarah Chang.
Melody. That's the short and simple name for it. It's 12:15. We'll have a quiz question at 12:30 or so.
We're listening to music of Sarah Chang because she's here in the studio, young and extremely talented violinist who has a huge discography and probably will continue to record for many, many years. You've got projects going forward, I imagine?
I do. I've got projects lined up for the next several years, the Brahms being the next one. And then we've got, projects that I can't really talk about right now, but we've got the next several years all lined up.
And as Norman mentioned, you started at the age of 9 in your recording career. It's
With the AMI, no less.
With the same company.
Yeah.
I'm with the same company since I was 9, which is quite unusual in any business, but especially the music business. So, I'm working with a great team. It's a great management team, great recording team, and I don't tend to fool around with things that seem to work. So, I'm very, very lucky. I'm very fortunate to have great people with me.
So, who decides? Let's do the Brahms.
It's a joint decision. At the beginning of every contract negotiation, both sides come. Come up with a wish list, basically. The Brahms has always been on mine. But it was really important for me to find a great partner for that, somebody that just seemed right and would click, and somebody that I've done the Brahms with many times before. This was one of the most painless decisions when it came to, negotiating and trying to figure out, something that I wanted, the company wanted, marketing wanted, everybody, and the Brahms and Brooks just seemed to click in place.
This is a studio recording?
This will be a studio recording. It's, the past few that I've done have, for some reason, always seemed to have been live. My past Shostakovich, Prokofiev, Lalo, Sibelius, all those pieces that I did were all done live, and just rolling tape during a concert. But no, the Brahms will be studio.
Going to miss the audience?
I always do. I always do. But, you know, then again, I play like 100-120 concerts a year. So
you get enough of them.
No, it's not that at all. But I feel like I've grown up on stage. And, you know, most of what I do, the huge majority of what I do, is based on stage and, you know, playing live and doing concerts. So it'll be a nice chance to do something in a studio.
Your most recent release was Vivaldi's Four Seasons. Is it a big shift to change from Baroque and back to Romantic? And do you really have to change your way of thinking?
You do have to keep an eye out for that. And especially since I was not using a Baroque violin or a Baroque bow. I did give it a try. I did work with a friend of mine who's into Baroque music. And, you know, I tried it a few times, figured out that it's not really for me. You know, my training's in the modern instruments right now, and I love my Guarneri. I love the Del Jesu that I have, and I'm very lucky to have it. So I did the recording on my own instrument, and when you're doing a Baroque piece, I think on modern instruments, I think you always have to keep an eye out and an ear out to try to keep it, you know, true in style.
It's always this question, isn't there, about how far to go with it?
Exactly.
In terms of the original instruments, and you can never entirely recreate what it would have sounded like in Vivaldi's time.
Exactly. I mean, first of all, we're not playing on gut strings. We're not playing with arch bows. We're not doing that. So, I mean, there's no way to even try to emulate that, even if you wanted to. So I didn't spend too much trying to be like that, because, first of all, you can't. There's just no way that you can. Playing today's instruments. So I tried to keep within the style of Vivaldi, of keeping it within the Baroque style playing by doing a little bit of ornamentation and a little bit, you know, it's more, I think, in the right hand, you know, with the bow stroke and the bow arm and the bow pressure, and keeping an eye out on that, but not trying to, bring it back to some sort of Baroque era type of playing, because the instruments itself that I was using weren't from that era. Anyway.
Everybody'd have to be a little girl anyway to be playing. Orchestra of foundling girls.
Exactly.
So. There's a marketing possibility for somebody.
Things have changed slightly now. So.
Are you ready for summer?
The question is, am I ready for winter? I want summer to come back. I feel like I haven't had much of a summer at all, but yeah.
Well, here's some from Vivaldi. This is the last movement of Summer from the Four Seasons with our guests, Sarah Chang and the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. This is your most recent recording?
Yes, it is.
The Last Movement of Summer, Vivaldi's Four Seasons. And that was Sarah Chang playing violin from her most recent recording featuring Vivaldi's Four Seasons.
Which has also another Vivaldi violin concerto addition. How would you begin to pick a Vivaldi violin concerto other than the Four Seasons? There are hundreds of them.
You have no idea how much time we spent on that. Like a lot of companies have been saying, the Vivaldi Four Seasons is not—it's not enough to fill up a disc by itself. It's a little too short.
About 45.
So we needed a filler, right? And we wanted to keep it within the theme of Vivaldi. So, you know, somebody came up with a brilliant idea. This wasn't me. to go through all of the Vivaldi concertos out there and to pick one. And I basically asked one of my best pianist friends to come over and open up a bottle of wine and spend a very, very long day with her on the piano, just reading through everything there was no way to do everything because he wrote hundreds and hundreds.
I was going to say, let me ask a cynical question. What difference would it make? one Vivaldi concerto or another?
No, they're all different. They're all very different. Some are quite charming. Some are quite dramatic. And, you know, some of them are quite similar in character, but some are absolute gems. And some, you know, there's a reason why they aren't played. You know? So, you know, we went through... I'm not even kidding. We must have gone through about 40 or 50 of the concertos and just played through everything and narrowed it down very quickly to two that I liked. And then we went from there. So, but it's fun. You know, it's I think, good to just sort of broaden your repertoire and to see what's out there. And, you know, my respect for Vivaldi, you know, shot through the roof, you know, because I can't imagine writing that much music.
And so much of it, I mean, probably... certainly not recorded, and much of it, as you say, not played. I mean, here's a guy who wrote, I think, 90 operas.
Yeah, exactly.
And how many of those do you hear? I mean, it was just incredibly prolific.
Exactly. No, I think there's a reason why, you know, the popular ones and the ones that are played are out on the circuit. It's because, you know, there's something very special about them. You know, there's character and warmth and passion, and there's, you know, there's a lot of great material inside, you know, some of the pieces, whereas, you know, some of the works, you know, it seemed to have sometimes been more for research or, you know, if you write, you know, 90 operas, they can't all be masterpieces.
I would think not, yeah. Maybe for Bach cantatas, but I'm not sure about Vivaldi operas.
Are you planning to do a recording project of the piece that was just premiered, the Chris Theophanides?
I would hope to. We're talking about it right now. Chris just texted me this morning, actually, because he knows that I'm back in the States, because I was in Asia for the past about 3 weeks or so, doing the LA Philharmonic tour. So we were in Asia for a while. But now Chris was texting me saying that he had made additional changes in the piece. and where should he send the score? So, but it's fun. It's fun to be a part of that whole project, to see it from the first draft and, you know, to have gotten to the stage where, you know, we gave the premiere, did the first version of it, which I thought was, you know, just he really wrote such an amazing piece that I was so proud to have been a part of it. But, you know, he came to the concerts and decided he wanted a few extra changes. So he's it's an ongoing process. It's very cool.
It got tremendous reviews.
Well, thank you.
And how much of that do you collaborate with him on? Is there a lot of back and forth, or does he tell you how it's going to be? What kind of
You know what? I have worked with other composers in the past where it was basically he wrote a piece. There was maybe one or two, you know, phone calls or back and forth meetings or whatnot, and that was it. You know, but with Chris for 2 years, this was very hands-on, very, very hands-on. And he was, from the very beginning, very honest with me, saying that he's not a violinist by training. The piano is his instrument. So there are a few things where violinistically, you know, I tried to nudge it in a direction where it would sit better on the fingers. But there was a lot of back and forth, a lot of phone calls when I was in Europe and he was in the States, or, you know, vice versa, where it would be 3 a.m. in Paris and I'd be calling him because, you know, we needed to get this done. And there were times when I think a month before the premiere, where it was getting to be crunch time, and I was calling him saying, you know, the score and the piano part, this doesn't really correlate, and it's not, I don't get this, what sort of sound do you want? And he would sort of laugh at me over the phone and say, I'm in a wedding, you know, in Mexico right now. Can I call you back in 2 hours? I'm not looking at the score. And I'm like, but I need to know what this note is. And it was really quite funny. And I had a lot of fun working with him. And I would certainly hope if every future collaboration with a living composer is going to be this much fun and this fulfilling, you know, on a creative level, then I won't be doing this all the time, really. It was so amazing.
There's something to be said for a living composer. You can get the answers faster.
Absolutely.
Well, it's interesting you brought up the fact that he's a pianist. And I think, you know, Brahms was a pianist. And some of the repertoire is kind of challenging for that reason. He didn't particularly write for a violinist.
No, but then again, he had Joachim. You know,
fortunately,
and
you know, Joachim, I mean, seriously, that man did so much for the repertoire, for the violin repertoire out there. I mean,
he wrote for it too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the cadenza I play in the Brahms concerto is a Joachim cadenza. He did the same thing for Bruch and so many other composers, where he just kept an eye out to make sure that it's that well in the fingers for a violinist. And you know, I think, you know, all of us, especially in the violin world, you know, just, you know, it's a sort of responsibility that I think is hugely daunting, but obviously we're all grateful to him for that.
That's the piece that Sarah will be performing this weekend with the Madison Symphony Orchestra. And if you'd like to get information or buy tickets, the number is 608-258-4141, or you can go online at madisonsymphony.org. And those three concerts are tomorrow night the 7th, Saturday night the 8th, and there is also a Sunday matinee on November 9th.
Well, before you take off for your next assignment, Sarah, just give us a little background on the finale here of the Symphony Española. It's a five-movement virtuosic piece. Do you have to hold anything? You have to hold anything back for that last movement and
the
then cut loose?
Yes. It's a great piece. It's a great piece. It's not played as often as some of the other concertos, but you're right. It's in five moments, which is quite unusual. Just means that you need to pace yourself a little bit better.
I mean, there is a marathon quality about some of these big works, is there not?
There really is. I think the only other major piece that I can think of right now at this moment that's not out of the three-moment usual context is Shostakovich, which is in four moments, and that cadence is in at the end of the third moment of all places. So, you know, that's a slightly unusual structure as well. But but Lalo is it's a very, very cool piece. I recorded that when I was, I think, about 13 or 14. That was, I think, my very first live recording.
It is, yes, at the Amsterdam Concertgebouw.
Yeah, it was with Charles Dutoit conducting, and we did that in Amsterdam. And I remember being in that hall and thinking it was the most gorgeous hall that I'd ever been in up until that point. And just to be recording live there, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better studio.
It comes very highly spoken of. It's said to be one of the three best acoustics in the world. See, the Symphony Hall in Boston.
Boston is amazing.
And Concertgebouw, and what's the other one I'm forgetting?
I would put Vienna on that list, the Vienna Musikverein.
Yes, that's the third one
Berlin
I've heard.
Yeah,
Musikverein, yeah.
Or the one in Berlin is pretty phenomenal as well.
So enjoy the acoustics and our guest, Sarah Chang. Pleasure having you with
us
again
tonight.
Thank you.
Good to be back.